I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast. Our next discussion is a continuation of the really interesting podcast series we've been having with the folks at E4. And today's podcast, I'm joined by Nick Stefany, who is E4's Chief Commercial Officer. Nick, I was joking with your colleague, Figile Sibiya, in our last podcast that E4 only seems to employ women. And here we are in our fourth podcast, and you're breaking with tradition here.
Yes, here I am.
Here you are, Nick. Welcome to the podcast. Whereabouts in South Africa are you right now?
I'm currently in Johannesburg.
Oh, you're in Joburg, same as me. Okay.
Yeah, in Joburg, yeah.
Impossible to tell these days. We used to do these meetings in person, but
no. Exactly. You've got no idea where anyone is except if their background screens change, then you can kind of guess. But the rest is
I had to
interesting
check.
Times.
I could have checked. Outside of that window could have been a Mauritian beach.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
We'll have to plan this better next time. Right?
Exactly.
Great. Well, we're doing a whole series of these podcasts with E4, and we've had some really interesting discussions so far. And if you've missed any of those interviews, please go back and have a listen to them. You'll find them in the podcast section.
Yeah, I've had a chance to listen to them all. You've spoken to the people that really know what they're talking about. I'm afraid you've got me now.
No, Nick, I'm sure. You've been with the business for almost 20 years. I'm sure you know it backwards, and you're going to be able to share some really interesting insights with us today. So you've really actually been with the business pretty much since its founding. E4 was founded about 21 years ago. It celebrated its 20th anniversary last year. And I think you've been with the group for about 18 or 19 of those years.
Yeah, that's right, Duncan. I was lucky enough to meet or come across the founders of the business. And it was really at its inception. And, I think neither of us knew any the wiser, and, they needed some young guys to help them with their idea and their business. So I was lucky enough to join them very early on. And, it's been an interesting journey, over the last 18 years as a result of that.
Yeah, you must have seen some interesting changes in this industry over that time, and at E4 itself. Maybe take us through some of those changes that you've seen. How have the discussions changed over the years? How have your conversations with clients changed?
Yeah, I guess it's been pretty much a lifetime in 18 years, and I think most of what one learns in business school or in MBAs, we've probably been through about four or five times in the last 18 years. So, you know, I think from a business perspective, we went through all of the periods one would expect, you know, from being a startup in a fledgling technology space. If you think to 18 years ago, it was really in its infancy. We still had dial up modems, back then, and we were really championing and pioneering quite a radical new idea, which was to connect mortgage lenders and attorneys electronically and take all their data and connect them electronically. And if you can imagine trying to convince a large mortgage lender that was the way to go 18 years ago was pretty radical. Mm. And then we went through, you know, Standard Bank back in the day, took it on board and decided that, we sort of vaguely knew what we were talking about and were happy to champion that idea with us. And it was really quite far ahead of its time, actually, looking back at it. And we grew rapidly from there because thanks to, you know, some good implementation and some really good developer work, the idea we had proved to be successful. And, you know, we very quickly went from a startup business to, you know, through some rapid growth and all of the highs and lows that come with rapid growth, not least of which trying to continuously improve the technology and continuously innovate, but also growing a business at a very rapid rate. We went from, I think, 9 employees to 60 and then 100 in the space of a couple of years. And at one point, we got up to about 450 employees in a very short space of time. And that obviously brought, you know, a lot of changes and a lot of shift in mentality. So we went through pretty much every cycle you can imagine in that period to where we are now, which is really quite a reasonably large sized technology business with a very large collection of blue chip customers, some very sophisticated technology that we run in that customer base, and a sort of very structured and operationally sound business. So a lot's happened in 18 years. And then the market itself has changed tremendously. I think all of our eyes were opened in that period around what technology could do for what was a very manual and process heavy industry being mortgages. And it's not just E4. I think they're collectively together with the mortgage lending partners who we've had in some cases 20-year relationships with. We've revolutionized together the manner in which mortgages are processed. And I know the banks that we work with are very proud of what they've achieved. And in many ways, they've been ahead of their time. And we're very proud of what we've achieved with them in a methodical way over the last 18 years. So yeah, it's been a great journey.
you've expanded your focus areas a lot in that time as well. You've become quite a broad-based fintech player in South Africa. For those who might have missed the earlier E4 podcast, just maybe briefly take us through E4's business focus areas today.
Yes. So again, in sticking with the theme and looking back over 18 years, we've tried various technologies and different industries and had a lot of exposure to, I guess we were doing fintech before fintech was even a word, and software as a service. We were doing it unbeknownst to us before it was even a catchphrase. Where we've arrived at today is we're very much focused on our subject matter expertise, and we realized over time that we've built up a huge amount of knowledge and very specific IP and very specific areas of, I guess, the fintech environment. Mm-hmm. So the first space that we've really homed in on and kind of try to make it our own is the PropTech space. So looking at the property environment in particular and looking at the property and specifically the mortgage registration environment and looking at how technology and innovations in technology can help to either improve processes or manage what can be some very complex environments in the mortgage space. So it is still today a huge focus of the business. And we really like to think of ourselves as, I guess, on a global or a world scale, rather the advanced in terms of the types of technology we've been able to deploy in that space. And that's also allowed us to take that technology into places further afield beyond South Africa. So we've also been lucky enough to take that PropTech technology into the UK with some early success and also some vindication around what's happened in South Africa in the tech space and actually how, as South Africans, we generally think we're not that far ahead, but actually, can hold our head up quite high in the technology world. And then second to that is we have a huge data focus. So a large component of the E4 business is focused on data. We have probably the market leading data aggregation platform in SearchWorks in Southern Africa for sure. And that's a business that we've been slowly building over time. And I guess we could foretell that data would be one of the great drivers. And nowadays everybody's talking about, at first it was big data. It's not even big data anymore. It's analytics and building insights into data. So we built that as a parallel or ancillary business and service that also complements PropTech, but it has a much broader focus in the data space. And there we're servicing financial services across the board. And have had a huge amount of success, but also see a great future for the data business. So huge amount of data at our disposal that we package, repackage, analyze, and then build into core banking processes. Mm-hmm. And then in line with that, we have a couple of other initiatives that have been underway for the last year or so that are proving, to be pretty successful, although early stage. So we got quite heavily involved in the RegTech space, so regulatory technology. And that was born out of the property business where we understood the need for digital platforms to onboard customers for credit lending and all the services that were required around that. So we built out a RegTech capability and we plugged that into the PropTech space, but that also has much broader applications. So if we think of digital banks in South Africa, there are a lot of them both in the incumbent space and new players. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, they've got to onboard a customer. They've got to go through a FICA process. They've got to go through an AML process. And if you and I were a customer, we've got to verify who we are. So we combine our data capabilities as well as some of our general fintech skill sets in building out a RegTech offering. And then lastly, although it's linked to the PropTech environment, we're building out a consumer platform for lending. So our first initiative there is directly linked into the property space, and we invested quite heavily in building, a mortgage application platform, so mortgageme.co.za, which we think is the first of its kind where the South African consumer can apply directly for a mortgage. It links into all of the mortgage lending institutions in South Africa and can have a digital experience in applying for a mortgage. And the back end to that is rather sophisticated in that it utilizes all the services and data sets and technology platforms that we've built up over the years. So that's kind of the core focus of the E4 business at the moment. And then I guess lastly, I mentioned our foray into the global or international scene in the UK, which is essentially a combination of all of those skill sets and 18 to 20 years worth of learning and taking that into a brand new market, which is the UK. Yeah, so that's where we're at today.
Okay, so how big is your UK business to date, and is it a fairly new operation you have there, and are you looking at other international markets as well?
Yes, yeah, so it's a relatively small business at the moment. We kind of taking it relatively slowly in the sense that we're using South African rands to invest in a UK or a pound based environment. So we've had a long history of offshoring our business. We've had a lot of experience in starting new tech businesses overseas. So we've kind of used all the learnings from that and homed in on a real opportunity in the UK. One of my partners in the business and a longstanding executive member has moved over to the UK to run the initiative. And then he's supported by a team of 10 developers. We have a development capability in Mauritius as well as South Africa to build that out. And we've just recently signed on one of the largest mortgage lenders to run a proof of concept with us. They've been a great partner to have, and we're in the process of running a rather sophisticated service with them to also look at automating some of the back end and more process heavy mortgage process environments for them. So very exciting, early days, but very exciting for us, Duncan.
So you do have a presence in Mauritius.
We do. So we could easily have done this call from there. I see the flights have just opened up, so you and I could have been on a plane and done the call from there. We've had an office in Mauritius. I'll get the numbers wrong, but it feels like a very long time. So we'd have a very strong developer skill set and capability in Mauritius as well as South Africa. So I'd say of the current 200 odd employees, half of them are tech or developer focused and based in and around South Africa. We have offices in Johannesburg, Durban and Cape Town. And then in parallel to that, we built out a business with developer capabilities in Mauritius. And we have a team of 10 in Mauritius that work as E4 out of there and build a lot of the new technology for us. So I guess in some senses, although very South Africa focused, we're kind of utilizing the best of what the world has to offer for us.
Yeah.
Also been a very interesting journey that.
Yeah, interesting indeed. Let's circle back a little bit. We were talking about the company's 2021 year history and all the changes that you've seen in that period of time. But I imagine the last 18 months have been particularly interesting in terms of some of the changes you've seen with obviously the COVID-19 pandemic that I'm alluding to.
Absolutely.
How ready was E4 for that? I believe, as a digital company, you were more ready than most for the whole work from home situation and some of the impact of that has had. But how has it impacted your go-to-market strategy, the way you work with clients, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I think for us and probably for everyone, it was unprecedented, to be honest. And I think it happened so quickly in many ways, it felt like a bit of a whirlwind. And I guess with the benefit of hindsight, It's been nothing short of exceptional for the way E4 has been able to handle, I guess, something that's certainly in my generation is nothing we've ever seen before. I guess the biggest challenge we've had prior to that was managing the business through the financial crisis in 2008.
Yeah.
So although the challenges were similar, the reasons were and are very different. So specific to COVID, from an operational perspective, it was phenomenal how well the business managed to change to a totally online environment. We managed to get in the initial lockdown, get everyone out of the office and get the entire business up and running in less than a morning. Had we have not told anyone that that's what we were doing, no one would have been any the wiser. And I guess the benefits we had is that we're a technology-based business. So a lot of it was facilitated and accelerated by the fact that both internally and externally, we're a tech-focused business. So that was relatively plain sailing, if I'm honest. And then another huge plus for us is we have, as I mentioned, very long-standing, deeply entrenched strategic relationships with our core clients.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and that was hugely beneficial in the seismic shift while our banks, for example, were also dealing with the impact and the unknowns of COVID. At least E4 was a very well-known entity and we are very well aligned and have worked with each other for a very long time. So that, in fairness, helped to smooth the change in terms of either go-to-market or stabilizing the market. I think we both got a huge sense of comfort in terms of the change that was precipitated by COVID. And then if anything for E4, we've seen an acceleration in delivery and an acceleration in the need for technology. So we run quite a sizable pipeline and quite a large innovation funnel at any point in time. We usually, in some cases, have rather long cycles. You know, it takes a couple of years for some decisions to be made around really new innovative technology because, A, they require massive amounts of investment, but they also require a lot of buy-in from banks to make a lot of changes. And what we've seen, thanks to or due to COVID, is that a lot of that's been accelerated. So our pipeline that maybe looked for delivery in 2023 or 2024, we've actually had to bring forward and deliver at the request of a lot of our clients and partners a lot earlier, which obviously on the one end has been great news for the business. So the business itself is, I hesitated to say it too loudly because I know it hasn't been like this for everyone, but we've done exceptionally well in the last 18 months. But at the same time, it's also meant that we've had to, you know, scale in line with that growth.
Sure.
So look, overall, on balance and looking back at it, very, very well handled by the team within E4. We've got an exceptionally skilled set of people and dedicated group of people in the business. They helped to make that happen. And overall, we've been very fortunate, very, very fortunate.
I'm really interested in discussions around the impact of these work from home measures. And many companies are talking about making this permanent now. I think PricewaterhouseCoopers said the other day that employees may continue to work from home forever, indefinitely, if they want to. And some other companies have said the same. I think Twitter was one of them as well, while others are saying, no, you've got to come back to the office. We need you here because of, you know, cultural reasons. We need people interfacing face to face in order to grow our business and determine who we are. How has the cultural impact of this work from home thing been for E4, and what has the impact been? I mean, it sounds like the impact on productivity has been negligible, and in fact may have been positive for your productivity. But over a longer sort of period, what is E4's thinking around people working from home? Is it something that you'd encourage, or would you prefer to see people back in the office, or do you think a mix of the two is going to be the right way going forward?
Yeah, I think it's a very poignant question. We're busy discussing that as a team as we speak, in fact. So that's that particular topic, and it's sort of arrived at the right point in time. It's a hot topic for discussion internally at E4. You know, what do we do going forward? We seem to have managed quite well so far. I don't think it's been easy for everybody. So I don't think there's been a one size fit all, and we're very aware of and conscious that working from home in its entirety doesn't necessarily suit everyone. And I think we've been very conscious of that. I think our HR team in particular have done a fantastic job of, I guess, to start off with just monitoring and understanding the cultural impact on the business. So it's one thing to have an acceleration in productivity, but at what cost, you know, does that come? And we've been very conscious of that. We have the benefit, I guess, to some extent of not being a large enterprise. You know, as I mentioned, there are 200 employees as opposed to 2,000 or 20,000. And generally, we foster a culture of a family environment and still have a kind of fast-moving startup mentality, and a lot of people have worked with each other for a very long time. So in fairness, it has made some of the transition easier. And then to your specific question around going forward and what do we as E4 think we should be doing, you know, is the right answer to everybody to go back to the office the way that it was and everybody works 9 to 5 and you all need to physically be in an office? Or is the answer, look, we seem to be working quite well offline and people can meet on a needs basis, or is there something in between? We haven't quite homed in on yet what we think will work well for E4 as opposed to what everybody else is doing.
Right.
We've just concluded a bit of research both locally and globally to try and understand what everybody's doing, whether it's PwC or Twitter, but also more like-minded or like-sized businesses. We're going to factor that into our decision-making. And then also the approach we take is to have a very collaborative one, is to also understand from the vast majority of staff, you know, what works best and what works best for your teams. Mm-hmm. And I think within the next couple of weeks, we'll make the right call as to what it should look like going forward on a more longer-term basis. But probably one of the bigger internal decisions we've got to make at the moment. Yeah. And then, of course, there's the elephant in the room around, you know, people's views around vaccination. And, you know, again, we all read the news and we all see what, you know, there's some differing views on both ends of the scales around whether you can only come back to work if you're vaccinated or not, and notwithstanding people's personal views on vaccination. So we trying to factor that in and be realistic and conscious of that too. So I think some big decisions that do need to be made. But I feel pretty confident that, you know, we'll get the right answer. I've got my personal views on what I think might happen.
I won't ask you for this.
but I think whatever decision we make specific to E4 generally works well for us.
Sure.
But it's very interesting times. And who knows, we're going to look back in 5 years' time, both here in South Africa and globally, and it'll be fascinating to see what everyone's done and how they've kind of rearranged to create whatever the new normal, you know, lands up being.
Yeah.
It'll be fascinating to see.
Our companies are going to have to make some potentially difficult decisions in the next little while. And,
I think so. You can already see that it's starting to come to the bubble over, you know, some big decisions. And I think particularly where you have a large workforce invariably varying views and the like, it's going to be, I think it's an easy decision to underestimate is my summation of it. Once you dig into it, it's not that easy.
Lots of potential landmines you're going to have to do.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. So just last question on this topic of COVID and work from home, et cetera. How have you interfaced with your clients during this time? I mean, working in the IT space, I suppose, you know, both your clients and yourselves are very comfortable using technology to communicate. So I imagine a lot of work has been done via Zoom and Teams and you know, platforms like that.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry, Duncan. We've all become experts at Teams, I think, it's fair to say. And most of, at least initially, especially in those sort of hard lockdown periods, and I think while everyone was trying to, you know, find their feet, you know, we made use of Teams and it worked phenomenally well for us. It worked phenomenally well for our clients. We have a number of touch points with our clients. So it's not just, one or two individuals, and across the board, you know, it's actually worked pretty well. And I think part of the reason is obviously the technology was available to do that, but a large part of it is we know our clients intimately. They've known us for a very long time, and specifically the individuals that work within our clients' environments and vice versa. And I think that made a huge difference, because obviously it's very different to having a meeting face to face, or you know, having a catch up over a coffee. Now suddenly, like you and I are doing, we're looking at each other through a through a computer screen. So initially that worked really well, and then where we could over time, and as the lockdowns eased, or depending on the position we were in as a country in relation to lockdowns, and depending on how our clients felt, we then had the odd, you know, the account managers and the like were able to have the odd interactions face to face. I think where it was quite tricky is in some of the newer sales environments, you know, and not being able to create and establish a relationship in physical form. In other words, you know, looking each other in the eye and kind of building a rapport. I think that's probably been one of the challenges we've had, and yet the sales team have done phenomenally well, you know, trying to build a relationship over Teams. It's almost like a virtual world. But I'd say that probably was one of the areas where the guys in the field selling were delighted to get out there. But it seems to be that it's slowly coming back, you know, in terms of, you know, being able to go out and meet people and actually spend some time together in the real world.
I think the question has now shifted from Zoom or Teams to are you vaccinated? Can we meet in person?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Simon, who's in the UK, I mentioned, he runs the UK business for us. He had his first in-person meeting and followed by a dinner in person in the UK, I think about a week or two ago. And the most exciting thing for him was the fact that they were in person. And I kept asking him, how was the meeting? And he said, no, it was just great to be, you know, seeing people. And, and I think that's a great example of, at the end of the day, generally, you know, we, as humans, we like to, you know, interact with each other. Yes. And then the questions are, get vaccinated quickly so we can meet, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I think it was one of your colleagues I said I mentioned this to in a previous podcast. For extroverts, the COVID-19 pandemic has been absolutely awful, but for introverts, it's been wonderful.
Yeah, I think that's spot on.
Before I let you go, Nick, I just wanted to maybe get your views on the fintech space, and also looking at it through a COVID lens. What the impact has been, and I've covered some of this ground with Fikile and some of her colleagues, but it was funny because 18 months ago many South African consumers were distrustful of using tap to pay it in retail stores. They thought, well, is this really safe to tap my credit card against this device to pay, or use my phone to pay for this? Now, if tap to pay isn't available, consumers get annoyed because they don't want to have to touch the point of sale device. So there's been this complete change in thinking in just 18 months. And I imagine it's not just that example. I imagine this is across the board. Do you think this has really accelerated the uptake of fintech as a concept in South Africa and around the world for that matter?
I mean, my simple answer is yes, absolutely. I think although E4 is very specifically focused on a very particular space, we've even seen it in that space where essentially through COVID and the pandemic, I mean, something as simple as we'd been pioneering electronic signatures and digital documentation for years, but the uptake on signing large contracts electronically was probably not as big as we'd hoped. And the opposite is true now. 18 months later, you know, essentially through COVID in very simple terms, it's the other way around. It's why is this stuff not available to sign electronically, you know, and that should be available to sign electronically. And whatever stumbling blocks there were, you know, as consumers to sign something electronically are over. And it's not dissimilar to the example you used around payments. And I guess in many ways, COVID or the pandemic has accelerated a lot of a lot of these things. And I guess has created, for me, the important thing is a mind shift change. And also for myself, I guess if I just take myself out of the E4 environment or the tech environment in my own world, is, you know, I'd much prefer to just tap and pay for many different reasons, or much prefer to, I guess in our household and probably like yours and many others, you know, the increase in online shopping and online ordering, and in turn, the quality of service that you get has improved dramatically.
Yeah.
So it's anecdotal, but I think undoubtedly across the board, there's a much greater acceleration of technology services, whether they're in fintech or proptech or even medtech, wherever across the board. And then I think also the mentality and the psychology around it from all of us has changed and accelerated, and it's almost beyond accepting of it. It's almost, to some extent, that's like what you expect now, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So definitely created a step change in my opinion. Yeah.
Great. Well, Nick, it's been a fascinating discussion. Thank you so much for your time.
Duncan, thank you. Thank you.
We're definitely going to do the next one in Mauritius though, right?
Absolutely. You're on. That's a deal.
Fantastic. Nick Stephanie, Chief Commercial Officer at E4. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with Tech Central today.